30 or so women soldiers from the Industrial Army of the Homefront who helped win World War II were on Capitol Hill this week. Real-life Rosie the Riveters, who did lots of jobs for the war effort in factories making weapons and thousands of planes that shifted the balance of power in Europe and the Pacific. Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick spent some time with the Rosies. Their muscles may have been a bit diminished, but their stories were still vivid.
Nice to meet you.
It was cool enough on the steps outside the U.S. Capitol that even members of Congress from Michigan were complaining about the chill of an early D.C. spring. Pageantry-filled honor flights of World War II vets arrive regularly on the Hill. This was the first honor flight for the women of the war, some of them vets themselves, but all of them Rosies. It was much warmer inside at a Capitol Hill reception, where Rosies told stories of community and solidarity with soldiers fighting in Europe and in the Pacific, but also stories of loss.
My name is Beth Fordyce. I'm from South Lyon, Michigan, and the job I did was drilling holes in bolts for the planes, the 17s, the B-17s.
Beth Fordyce's husband was deployed just days after Pearl Harbor. She had two small children who she put in a home, this was common at the time, where families cared for kids so that women could go to work in the factories. Beth says she was only able to get out to see her kids every 2 or 3 weeks.
I couldn't get out there more often than that, and so I was able to see them. The children, the one daughter, had an awful time when I would come and visit and then leave, and she had such a terrible time of handling it that the lady that took care of them for me told me that they couldn't deal with the daughter. It was too upsetting to her, and it would take too many weeks for her to level out. So they asked me not to come out and see them anymore. And that was, it's a little tough.
The family pressure could be great, but the pay was good. In many cases, women made a dollar an hour. That was good money at the time. But Rosies were also part of an organized war propaganda effort designed to build a war machine while boosting morale and solidarity with the effort. At one point in the day, a few of the Rosies crossed paths with an onlooker named Hassel Vass.
I'm from Baltimore, Maryland. I served with the 10th Mountain Division in Italy, December 42 to September 45. Listen, they were a great part of the war, a great part of it. And I worked with many of them for a few months before I went in service at Martin Aircraft Company. They were loyal, and they were hard workers. We had the assurance that we had some people back home working for us, praying for us, and helping out, doing everything they could.
Many Rosies worked at Ford's Willow Run plant outside of Detroit, Michigan. At its height, Willow Run turned out B-24 bombers at an astonishing rate of one per hour. By the end of the war, Willow Run had produced 8,700 B-24s, and other plants made thousands more. Betty Pasdrow worked nearby at another plant owned by the Packard Motor Company. She was an inspector on Rolls-Royce engines for British aircraft. It was sensitive work. The workers were under the eye of military personnel looking for signs of sabotage. Betty says she never even talked much about the experience with her own family.
I never talked about what we did or how we did it or how we were denied anything. They're hearing more about it because I'm a Rosie and people are asking me questions. But I never thought to be talking about it. I mean, I didn't think anybody'd be interested. But look at what's happened.
Betty Pasdrow told me she's glad she's telling the story now. She says things have changed. People don't help each other as much as they did back then. They don't look out for each other in the same way. And Betty says that soon there won't be any Rosies left who remember how it was.
Takeaway Washington correspondent Todd Zwillick in D.C. this week with some of the original Rosies.
She's a part of the assembly line. She's making history, working for victory. Rosie the Riveter keeps a sharp lookout for sabotage. Sitting up there on the fuselage, that little brave can do more than a mere can do. Rosie the Riveter.
Rosie's got a boyfriend, Charlie.
Rosie. I love that. I love that. So, did you ever know a woman who made a career change, either to save the world, like in World War II, or now? Grand Prairie, Texas, my great-grandmother went to work in a secret factory in the town that I grew up in, building missiles for the Air Force, and no one knew they were even there, because those ladies never told even their closest friends.
This is Lois Gridley calling from Syracuse, New York. My aunties were almost 40 when World War II started, but they'd always worked. One for the YMCA, including in Japan in the 1920s, the other for AT&T, where she developed a long-distance patent. My grandma knitted hundreds of socks for soldiers. Women got new opportunities because of World War II, but they weren't all at home before that.
Stephanie, I'm Flammy from North Bend, Nebraska. During World War II, my mom signed up to become a WAVE with the United States Navy. She worked in Washington, D.C. for the Pentagon as a printer setting type. She marched in President Roosevelt's funeral. Before enlisting, she was working in Omaha when she saw an Uncle Sam Wants You poster, and that was the deciding factor for her.
This is Damaris Morrill from St. Louis. My mom immigrated to the U.S. from the Philippines when she was 36 with six kids, and eventually my dad left our family. She had to be both mom and dad. My mom is definitely the strongest woman I know.
San Mateo, California, my mother and father started a small manufacturing company. Many of the materials they needed went into the war effort and were severely rationed, but my mom's bookkeeping skills kept everything afloat.
My name's Nancy. I'm calling from Ocoee, Florida. My mother's from Finland, now a U.S. citizen since 1956 and is 94 years old. She's still vibrant. During World War II, she was 18 and a volunteer with the Red Cross on the front line hospital between Finland and Russia. She's a strong and amazing woman who knew how to survive, as well as caring for those in need.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.